And now, ladies and gentlemen, we present a man. Eyes blue, hair brown, weight 179, height 5 feet 11 inches, complexion ruddy. Identifying marks, one bag under each eye. Name, Alan, comma, Fred, in Kirkham.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving, and we've got the turkey for you here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, say, Jimmy.
Yes?
Jimmy, what is with you? Last week you had amnesia, you didn't even know who I was. This week you introduced me as though I was up for a membership in the Boy Scouts or something.
Well, I'm sorry, Fred. I spent all day filling out my selective service questionnaire. I guess I'm a little answer happy.
Well, if you ever spend an afternoon filling in a fire department application, Jimmy, I'll probably be introduced here as a big square. Stuck for a line there.
Yeah.
We should have had something better, but...
Well, I'll try to keep control of myself, Fred.
Yes, you should, Jimmy. Well, that fixes the next line. Don't bother with it. Come in.
Say, Mr. Allen.
Yes, Kenny?
I've got my draft questionnaire here, too.
Well, you better fill it out, son.
Well, I started to, but I'm stuck on one question.
You're stuck on one question? Did you hear me on information, please, Friday?
Do I have to answer?
No. No, we can go into that later. What draft question is sticking you there, Kenneth?
Well, right here where it says profession...
Yeah?
I don't know what to put down.
You don't know what you are?
Not since I came on this program, I don't. I'm an actor, a singer, a writer. What shall I put down?
Just put down Nudnik.
Say, I've been promoted.
Yeah. You understand, of course, Kenny, that this is merely an honorary promotion. There is no increase in stipend.
Oh, I don't want any more money, Mr. Allen. I'm happy just to be a nudnik.
Well, that's fine.
What is a nudnik, Mr. Allen?
Well, a nudnik is a man who is happy to be one in the first place. And he is also a man who has been exposed to culture but has successfully fended off contamination.
Boy, am I a nudnik.
Go away, Kenny.
Today I am a nudnik.
Now that Kenny has finally found himself, we turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents The World on Parade. New York City, New York. World premiere of Walt Disney's Fantasia is held at Broadway Theater in New York City. New departure in screen entertainment, combining symphony music and cartoon technique, starts open war between symphony and music critics. Tonight, Texaco News invites critics to give their assorted opinions on Mr. Disney's spectacular experiment Fantasia at our microphone. First, we greet a little-known music authority, Mr. Bosley Tassett. Now, as a specialist, Bosley, your opinion is...
Fantasia is symphonic skullduggery that thumbs its fugue at melodic traditions.
You didn't care?
It was half cartoon and half symphony.
Well, what's wrong with cartoon, symphony, and cartoon?
They don't mix. You don't put cod liver oil on your waffles, do you?
Well, no.
You don't put whipped cream on your shrimps, do you?
Well, no.
You don't put mustard on angel cake, do you?
Well, that's...
Of course not. They don't mix. Symphony is symphony, cartoon is cartoon, never the twain shall meet.
Who said that?
I did.
Oh, I thought I'd heard it before.
If you heard it before, it was someone repeating what I just said.
Well, there is no answer to that. Now, why do you think Mr. Disney made Fantasia, Mr. Tassett?
He was trying to picturize the average man's thought as he listens to great music.
Well, do you know what the average man thinks as he attends a symphony concert?
Yeah, he thinks one thing: how can I get out of here?
But in your estimation, Mr. Disney's experiment doesn't quite work out.
It's dangerous. If Disney starts mixing symphony and cartoons, people won't know where they're going.
Yes, I...
Music lovers will be swarming into the newsreel theaters to hear Stokowski.
Yes.
The riffraff will be piling into Carnegie Hall to see Donald Duck.
Summing up, you feel that mating the cartoon with symphony is fantastic.
They don't mix. You don't put horseradish on asparagus, do you?
Well, thank you.
You don't put confetti on a casserole, do you?
Thank you.
They don't mix.
But you and I will mix if you don't get out. Thank you under protest, Mr. Bosley Tassett. A movie critic who reviewed Fantasia solely as a picture is Danton Gilfey. What paper are you with, Danton?
The Cattle Breeders Gazette.
The Cattle Breeders Gazette has a movie column?
Yes, I'm the critic. I specialize in Western pictures, mostly.
Oh, I see.
Western pictures is generally full of horses and cows.
Oh, and you?
I just review the performances of the cattle.
Only the cattle?
Now, they call me the Jimmy Fiddler of the stockyards.
And if you like a picture?
I give it four bulls.
Bully for you. Well, you say you only review the cattle performances in the pictures, just the cattle.
Yes, I don't pay no attention to the actors.
Well, tell me, is it a secret? How do you go about reviewing a picture, Danton?
Well, say, for instance, I'm critiquing a new Gene Autry picture. I don't pay no mind to Autry. I just keep my eyes glued on his horse.
Yes?
I watch how he works under Gene, see if he's raring, trying to steal a scene. Watch if he's overdoing his whinnying.
Well, now let us be frank, Danton. Do your reviews carry a lot of weight?
Well, I can make or break a steer in my column.
You don't say.
I panned a mare and the Hardy family on the Pampers.
Did the mare quit pictures?
Gave up and went with Bing Crosby the next day.
Well, tell me, Danton, if you're a cattle critic, how did you come to review Fantasia?
There were centaurs in it, wasn't there?
What's a centaur?
Half man, half horse.
Oh, really? Well, how did you like Fantasia?
The centaurs was very good. The half I reviewed.
I can see my local paper for any other news that came. Well, I guess now that the picture has opened, you'll be heading back where?
No, I'm interviewing Elsie the Cow for Moo Confessions.
Oh, while you're here, are you?
Yes, then I'm doing a book review for the Cattle Breeders Gazette.
Oh, a new book?
Yes, it's by Ernie Hemingway.
A cattle book?
Yep, For Whom the Bull Tolls.
That's a finish if I ever heard one, and I seldom hear one. And thank you, Danton Gilfey. A young lady who saw Fantasia not as a critic, but simply as a member of the first night audience, is Miss Lovey Kornheiser. You saw the picture, Lovey?
Yeah. The boyfriend got two tickets by mistake. He thought Fantasia was something to do with fan dancing and cheesing.
But you went to see it anyway.
First, we stopped in for a Chinese dinner.
Where?
At Wang Fat's.
Wang
It's a combination hand laundry and Chinese delicatessen.
Oh, they have the starch salami there, do they? Fine,
I have the mandarin blue plate with two vegetables and your fortune told for 35 cents.
Well, that is a lot for the money, isn't it?
Yeah. The fortune teller was good, so I figure the food is bad, but it's too late.
Why?
I'm already finished eating. There's nothing I can do but worry.
You thought you'd have vertigo?
No, it's only two blocks to the theater.
Well, you got there all right.
Yeah. I get into the theater. The lights go out. I'm starting to get dizzy.
Nausea?
Everything's going around. I start seeing lavender mushrooms. Then it's navy blue hippopotamuses. Plant ostriches. They're dancing with cerise bubbles and purple skeletons. Everything's swimming.
This went on all evening?
Everything is in all colors, and it's swimming.
Well, what did you do?
When the show was over, I says to the boyfriend, get me to a drugstore quick.
Yes?
And the boyfriend says, what is it? Did you get a Mickey someplace?
Yeah.
No, I says, it's that Chinese food. I've been seeing lavender mushrooms dancing with navy blue hippopotamuses.
Well, what did the boyfriend say?
He busts out laughing. He says, that wasn't your stomach. You were seeing the picture.
So the only recollection you have, then, of Fantasia...
To me, it looked like a hangover in Technicolor.
Well, thank you, Miss Lovey Kornheiser. A Broadway song plugger who doesn't see eye to eye with Messrs. Disney and Stokowski is little Heim B. Himberg. You are a song demonstrator, Heimby.
Yeah, I'm plugging for Eureka, the house of hits.
That is until January 1st.
Yeah.
Well, you saw Fantasia?
Yeah, the pitch is okay, but that music, it's long hair, it's corny.
You mean those beautiful symphonies?
I can make better music beating your bangy on the lips with a tuning fork.
Well, but in Fantasia, the numbers are cleverly illustrated.
Who knows? Who can understand it? The Nutcracker Suite. Who wants to see people cracking nuts to music?
Oh, no.
A night on Bald Mountain. A guy's bald, so he spends the night on a mountain. So what?
You don't. Better than on Bear Mountain. He'd have froze to death. That's probably why the symphony was never written about Bear Mountain. But you don't understand, Heimby. These are all symphonies.
And who needs symphonies? People today want jive, swing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, if Disney wants to animate, he ought to pick out a hit tune.
Well, which song would you suggest?
Beat Me Daddy 8 to the Bar.
Look, how can you animate Beat Me Daddy 8 to the Bar?
Now, wait, I'll show you. A girl comes on with a daddy. It's a saloon.
Yeah?
8 guys beat it to the bar. Which way is Disney?
Well, I tell you, you go out here straight.
Yeah.
You take the first turn left.
Yeah.
Go straight ahead.
Yeah.
Until you come to San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, that... Oh, wise guy, yeah.
That is the consensus, yeah. While the film and music critics wrangle, Fantasia jams the Broadway theater. Popular opinion has acclaimed Fantasia to be a smash hit. For it isn't the critics who make a picture like Fantasia a great success. It's the little man who steps up to the box office window with his money in his hand and says... Say, that was really good, Kenny. Hey, look. Hey, well, Kenny, what are all those red things sticking out of your coat pocket there?
Oh, these are my firecrackers for tomorrow.
Firecrackers? Well, Kenny, tomorrow's Thanksgiving, not the 4th of July. You can't shoot firecrackers off tomorrow.
Gosh, I'd better get rid of these. I'll shoot them off now.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Not in here.
Oh, Lord, take a second. Wait till I light this match. It'll be over in a minute.
Now, Kenny, put that firecracker out.
Here it goes. Hold your ears, folks. It's going to go off. Boy, will it be a bang. Oh, shucks.
What happened?
Gee, it didn't go off. Must have been a dud. All that trouble wasted.
Oh, I wouldn't call it wasted.
Well, I would.
No, Fred, I think that Kenny's demonstrated a very good point there.
Well, how so, Jimmy?
Well, we all know that when you touch off a firecracker and it doesn't explode, it's a dud. But perhaps you don't know that something very like that can happen in the cylinders of your car.
There, it's courtesy of Local 802, have just played Waltz in Swing Time. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Hello, Mr. Allen, and goodbye.
Hey, now, wait a minute. You're not leaving already, Portland.
Oh, I'm frightened.
Well, frightened? Why?
There's a big bird outside with a man under it.
Well, that's Mr. Ramshaw, the eagle.
That same eagle who last year...
Yes, the eagle is our guest again tonight.
Goodbye, Mr. Allen.
Goodbye. And as Portland, please, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce an old friend, or rather two old friends, Captain Charles Knight and his famous eagle, Mr. Ramshaw. Thank you. Well, Captain, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back to our microphone again.
Thank you, Fred. It's good to see you again.
Good. I'm happy to observe that our mutual friend, Mr. Ramshaw, is still perched on your wrist. I'm surprised that Ramshaw came along, Captain. At our last meeting, as I recall, Ramshaw and I parted bad friends.
Oh, that's all over now, Fred. Ramshaw never holds a grudge. Say hello to him.
Well, good evening, Mr. Ramshaw. Hiya, big boy. Now, you see, Captain, that 10th Avenue Sparrow is deliberately snubbing.
Nonsense, Fred. Ramshaw's just a little shy, that's all.
Well, there was nothing shy about him the last time he was here. But, Captain, I don't like the way that eagle is looking at me. You don't think that he thinks my dandruff is birdseed, do you?
He's not here incognito tonight as a buzzard, is he?
Don't worry, Fred. I promise you Ramshaw won't hurt you.
Well, I want Ramshaw to make himself at home, Captain. I just hope he won't overdo it.
I've cautioned him, Fred.
Well, fine. Now, for the benefit of listeners who didn't hear Mr. Ramshaw's first artistic triumph on our program, Captain Knight, I think we should run over some of the salient facts concerning his background.
Whatever you say, Fred.
Well, first of all, is Ramshaw here an American eagle?
No, but he's closely related to your American bird. Ramshaw is an Aquila chrysetus. It's a Scotch golden eagle.
And how old is this mint symbol of yours?
14.
14. Well, do you have to take the eagle with you everywhere you go?
Oh, of course. You see, I lecture for various organizations, museums and clubs, and the National Geographic Society and Philadelphia Forum and so on, and I lecture on natural history subjects, including eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Ramshaw's my constant companion, and he's the Exhibit A.
Well, Ramshaw is really a feathered stooge and doesn't know it. He's a sort of a molting Rochester, isn't he?
Oh, I wouldn't know about that. I've never been to Rochester.
Fixes that up for good. Now, tell me, Captain, how do you travel around the country with an eagle? How do you check into a hotel? You can't walk in and say, give me a double room with a nest, can you? Or a single room with a bird bath?
No, but I always manage somehow to find a place to put old Ramshaw in. At the moment, he's living on the top of the Gotham Hotel in a penthouse.
In a penthouse, eh? Why, that Jersey City nightingale lives better than I do, Captain.
All eagles live high, Fred.
Was that a joke, Captain?
If you don't mind, old boy.
Well, not at all. How did you train such a ferocious specimen to sit quietly on your wrist? Does Ramshaw think he's hatching out your bull over there?
Oh, no, Fred. Training an eagle is principally a matter of patience and of understanding bird habits.
Well, what are some of the things this prehistoric lovebird has been trained to do?
Well, Ramshaw is expert as a falcon. He's an adept at hunting small game.
And he obeys your orders implicitly?
Oh, yes. I can release him now. I'll command him to fly to any place you like.
Oh, no, wait a minute. No, you don't. None of that, Captain. Now, wait a minute. Now, the last time we released Ramshaw, he flew up in the rafters and refused to come down. We had to put feathers on an Afro man and send him up there. How do you account for Ramshaw's winged ad living that night?
Well, we all make mistakes, Fred. After all, Ramshaw's only human.
Yes, I recall that evening. Ramshaw appeared not only as an artiste, but as a critic, too. But tell me, have you and Mr. Ramshaw had any interesting experiences since your last visit?
Yes, Ramshaw and I have seen some exciting times, Fred. We certainly had a narrow squeak when we were torpedoed.
Well, the last time you left us, Captain, you and Ramshaw went across to entertain the British troops in France.
We did, Fred. Then I was due back here for a lecture tour. And late last August, we sailed on the Volendam.
Yes?
Well, about 11 o'clock on the third night out, I was just dozing off in my cabin when suddenly there was an almighty crash. The ship shuddered and shook. And for a moment, I thought we were sunk.
Were you frightened?
Well, it wasn't very pleasant, Fred. But I must say the passengers and crew behaved marvelously.
Where was the eagle all of this time?
Ramshaw was down below in his cabin. At first, I thought I'd have to leave him to his fate. Then it occurred to me that the ship wasn't sinking too fast, and I thought I might stay on board and take care of him. So I let the lifeboat go.
Well, that was a genuine expression of loyalty, Captain.
Oh, there wasn't any real sentiment involved, but after all, it was old Ramshaw, you know.
Well, what did you do?
I stayed on board until the captain ordered me to leave the ship. I finally left in the last lifeboat without Ramshaw.
And how long were you at sea in the lifeboat?
About 2 hours. We were picked up finally by a British destroyer at 4 o'clock in the morning.
And you returned to England?
Yes. And about a week later, the Volendam was reported sunk. I said to myself, well, that's the last of poor old Ramshaw.
And yet here he is tonight, mounted on your sleeve as big as life.
Yes, Fred. It later developed that the Volendam had not sunk, She was towed back in pretty bad state and beached at the mouth of a Scottish river. I got permission to go aboard and see if there was any trace of poor old Ramshaw.
And where did you find her?
He was perched on a partition in his flooded cabin and very much alive. For the first time in his life, the old blighter was pleased to see me.
Well, that must have been a joyful reunion, Captain.
It certainly was, Fred.
Well, all's well that ends well, and I'm sincerely happy to see both you and Ramshaw looking so well after your extremely narrow escape, Captain, and I hope your lecture tour this season will be a most successful one.
Well, that's most kind of you, Fred. Ramshaw can't express his thanks, but I do for both of us. Good night.
Good night, and thank you, Captain. Martin Quartet play Hooky from Louisiana Purchase, just long enough to sing for us Chi-Chi Castanango. When you went out to your garage this morning and stepped on the starter of your car, did it sound something like this? Or when you stepped on the starter, did it bring results like this? Was your car, may I suggest that you lend an ear, or better yet, lend both ears, to the president of the Society for Contented Motors, Jimmy Wallington.
Perhaps you've noticed that the engine of your car is a little slower to take over these chilly mornings. The gears work stiff.
Is it all right if I wear my seersucker sports suit and my tan button shoes when we go to Waukegan?
Well, who's going to Waukegan?
We are. Dennis Day wrote me in his letter that Mr. Benny's picture is opening there. We all have to go.
Now, look, Kenny, it isn't Mr. Benny's picture. It's my picture. And it isn't opening at Waukegan. It's opening at Old Orchard Beach.
But Jack said Sunday night.
I don't care what Benny said Sunday night. I had three phone calls this morning from big Paramount executives, Mark Sandridge, Mr. LeBaron, and Mr. Freeman.
Is everything settled, Mr. Allen?
It sure is. We're leaving for Old Orchard.
When?
Well, as soon as Mark Sandridge, the way I get it today, hot over the wire, as soon as Mark Sandridge hears from publicity, he's calling Mr. LeBaron. The minute Mr. LeBaron hears from Mark Sandridge, he's calling Mr. Freeman. And the second that Mr. Freeman hears from Mr. LeBaron, he'll tell us when.
Well, couldn't they all just get together and decide, Mr. Allen?
Oh, Paramount doesn't work that way. Why, we're dealing with Hollywood now. Why, it's apt to take 200 men to work out this decision. Conference, years of conferences may precede this thing here.
Gosh, that's wonderful. All the Paramount men calling you up, Mr. Allen.
Well, this'll show Benny with those big blue eyes. Mark Sandridge, Mr. LeBaron, Frankie Freeman. He can't get in even into their offices, and they're calling me up.
Jack isn't through at Paramount, is he?
Well, he's on his last legs, and he's no centipede. If that guy's an actor, I'm indispensable.
No man is indispensable.
Who said that?
I, Goodman, said it.
Now, wait a minute. Do you think Benny is an actor?
Yes, but after all, who am I?
Well, that's the point.
Don't you think Jack can act, Mr. Allen?
Did you ever see him on the stage?
No.
Well, I saw him in early... Oh, lucky you. No wonder you grew up to your normal height. I'm stunted, you know. Yes, I saw him in Earl Carroll's Vanities back around 1929 or 30. In one scene, Benny had the audacity to appear in a tableau made up as Abraham Lincoln. Well, prior to that time, Lincoln had been doing all right on the penny. But as Benny played him, the scent was on Lincoln. That was 10 years ago, and Benny hasn't felt the part yet.
Can you prove it, Mr. Allen?
Well, I certainly can, Kenny. If Benny was Lincoln, he'd have freed Rochester years ago.
And you know, I worked for Benny for 2 years.
How did you get away, Kenny?
I was extradited.
Sure. You can get away. What a program. 6 delicious flavors and a miss.
Jack? Jack's going on with Baby Snacks tomorrow night.
What did you say?
Oh,
Never mind a line like that. There's a guest star, sure. He's a guest star with Baby Snooks.
Huh?
When I guest star, I go on information, please. I'm in there punching with intellectuals. Did you hear me on information, please, Kenny?
Yes, but don't quote me.
Wait a minute. Don't think it's easy getting up there with all those experts. I sat next to John Kieran, and when he opened his mouth, the undertow from his brain was terrific.
Why were you so quiet at the beginning of the program, Mr. Allen?
Well, it took me a little while to get the hang of it.
How do you mean, F.A.?
Well, that's right. Be more businesslike, Kenny. Well, KB, you know, the experts on that show have developed a certain technique for answering questions.
You mean signals?
No, I won't say that they give signals. But when Mr. Fadiman asks a question, the experts each raise one hand, and the other hand they slap over the mouth of the guest. Try talking with three hands over your mouth. Luckily, FPA has a short little finger, and I finally talked over that at the end.
You got even with them, Mr. Allen. When you started answering questions, and they had to pay out $125.
Yes, sir.
Boy, was that cash register bell going. Sound like a good humor men's convention.
I heard you on information, please, Fred.
Well, how did you happen to tune in that program, Mr. Goodman?
Accidentally. I was trying to find Calling All Men to Barney's.
And you stayed tuned in?
No. I finally got Barney.
Well, you're lucky.
Well, anyway, you were good on those sound questions, Mr. Allen.
Well, I tell you, Kenny, anyone who was in vaudeville 20 years gets to know a lot about sound. You know, at one time I was considered an authority on decibel life in the low theater balconies. Oh, I could tell you to account how many birds you would get at the National, the Boulevard. Estimating.
I bet Teddy and I can stick you on some sound.
Yeah, let's go, Porty.
You mean you two have prepared an amateur quiz for me?
Mm-hmm.
It's a stumper.
Well, what is it?
Kenny will work the sound effects behind this screen,
yeah.
And you tell us what they are.
Oh, look,
get behind the screen, Kenny.
Okay, here I go.
Ready, Mr. Allen?
All right, go ahead.
The first sound effect, Kenny.
What was that, Mr. Allen?
A horse.
What kind of a horse?
Well, I'd say a racehorse.
What's his name?
I know. Little Caporus.
Now, wait a minute. You stay out of this, Mr. Goodman.
It was the fourth race at Pimlico.
Quiet.
Well, I know that horse.
We don't care about your friends.
I should spend on my wife what I spent on that horse.
Your wife should pay 20-1 at Jamaica some afternoon.
My wife has been out of the money since she married me.
Quiet.
Ready for the next sound, Mr. Allen?
And Mr. Goodman will keep quiet, yes.
Oh, wait a minute, Porty. Mr. Goodman, may I borrow your watch?
Sure, here.
Thanks. I'll get back behind the screen now. You ready, Mr. Allen?
Yeah.
Here goes.
What was that, Mr. Allen?
Do you know what it was, Mr. Goodman?
No.
Well, something tells me that next week, your overture will be, I didn't know what time it was.
Here comes another one, Mr. Allen. Wait, I'll pick up Mr. Goodman's watch first.
That, Kenny, was a piece of cloth being ripped. It's peculiar they asked me the same question on information, please.
Yes, Mr. Allen, but what kind of cloth was this?
Tweed.
Coat, vest, or pants?
Pants.
Size 28?
I'm afraid so, Kenny.
Patch pocket?
Yeah.
Has one of the pockets got a yo-yo in it?
From here, I would say yes.
Mr. Allen.
Yes, Kenny.
Can I sing my next number from behind this screen?
I insist on it, Kenny. And so, ladies and gentlemen, in the dull crimson glow of Portland's blushes, Kenny Baker sings for us, Genie with the Light Brown Hair. Thank you. For many years, we men have been making wisecracks about women drivers. Now, tonight, we're going to turn the tables and let a woman take a few slaps at us males for a change. I give you, then, that renowned authority on the masculine motorist, Miss Wanda Stepp. I believe that you've made a long study of the man in the seat, Miss Stamp.
Yes, Mr. Allen. I've found that many drivers fall into several groups.
Yes?
First, we have the mother's boy driver. He promised he'd always stay on the straight and narrow path. So when he has to turn, he tries to do it when other drivers aren't looking.
A sneaky character.
Yes. Then there's the Casper Milquetoast driver. He's always afraid a policeman will whistle at him and he won't hear it. So every 15 feet, he jams on his brakes and stops to listen.
Well, thank you for...
And then the nonpartisan driver. He won't take sides in anything. So when he's driving, he stays right in the middle of the road.
Well, Miss Sabbath, you better...
Now, wait
a minute, madam. That's enough. You've set men drivers back 30 years already.
Oh, let's have one more time,
Brad.
You
keep out of this, too, Larry Elliott. The motoring male has been criticized enough for one evening.
Yeah, but there's one type, Fred, that hasn't been mentioned. He's above criticism. He's the smooth driver.
The smooth driver? Well, what is his characteristic, Larry?
Well, an air of confidence, Fred, and that confidence...
...presents a swing version of an old masterpiece. It's called The Hot Old Homestead, or Let's Make Hay Hay with the FHA. Over to you, Maestro.
No use, Ma. I can't raise that mortgage money. Squire Green will be here any minute. And out we get. Out we get.
Go ahead and get.
Quiet, please. Go on with the sketch, Ronald.
Squire Green will be here any minute. And out we get.
Go ahead, get. Quiet,
please. Who is that heckling in the front row there?
That's me.
And me, too.
Well, what's the big idea interrupting our masterpiece, The Hot Old Homestead?
Masterpiece? We know how it's going to end, eh, Doris?
Sure, we know it backwards.
You two know how this unique and extraordinary sketch is going to turn out? Well, who are you?
Tell him, Luther.
Tell him nothing. If he can remember them old jokes, he ought to remember me.
Say that. That's right. I've got it now. You two heckled me last year.
Oh, you got us. This is Doris, and I'm Luther. Luther Snell.
Snell?
With an N.
That's what you think. The last time you were here, you came to squawk about your radio piece.
Yeah, and that's why we're here again tonight.
We're getting bored.
With radio?
Yeah, every week it's the same old baloney slice, the same old way. Every week the Pot of Platinum gives away dough, the Hit Parade playing hits, gangbusters busting games.
Well, that's radio. What do you want?
Can't nothing different happen?
Yeah, we want to see them programs reversed once in a while.
Well, I'm sorry. I've got a sketch to do here.
Well, okay. Come on, Doris.
I'm coming, Luther. Take my mitten.
Now, wait a minute. Don't take a mitten, Luther. Now, wait a minute. Radio can't afford to lose two fans at this juncture. I tell you what we'll do. Instead of doing our sketch, Luther, I'll grant your wish.
Oh, good. You'll show us how some of them programs would sound in our voice?
Well, I'll try to if I can. Now, what particular show has upset you?
Well, first, them guys that does those kid programs.
You mean those radio uncles?
Yeah, they laugh like their parents was hyenas.
How can them tomatoes always be so cheerful?
Nobody can be that happy all the time. It ain't human.
Well, in other words, what you object to is this.
Good evening, kiddies. This is old Uncle Humpty saying hello to you all. Well, have you all been good kiddies since yesterday, huh? Are you all chewing Piper's peppermint gum tonight, huh? Happy birthday, Susie. Little Susie Fig's bottle of Nova Cord, Michigan, is having a birthday party in the family trailer tonight. Susie, if you look under the trailer, you'll find a present from Uncle Humpty. It's a stick of that delicious Piper's peppermint gum. Well, gum by, kiddies. And when you buy gum, buy Piper's peppermint.
Well, there you are. There you are, folks. That, I take it, is the type of chap who gets your goat, huh?
Yeah. Now, what's that guy laughing about?
Yeah. Always laughing. Don't he never feel grouchy? Ain't he never dull and logy?
Can't he just for once come out and say what he's really thinking?
Well, all right. Now, let's see how Uncle Humpty might sound if he came on some night and said exactly what's on his mind.
Hello, you little punks. This is Uncle Humpty, you junior rats. Boy, I keep soft soaping you brats for the short dough I'm getting beats me. Boy, have I got a hangover. tastes like the heel of a motorman's stocking. Little Buster Pincus is having a birthday today. When your mother lights your birthday cake, Buster, step in it. Give yourself a hot foot. And that other runt who rode in for a free bicycle. I'll give you a bust in your little mouth. Who do you kids think I am, Santa Claus? And is Uncle Humpty telling you little pests off? Boo! And I hope it scares the britches off of you. Good night.
How is that, folks?
Well, that's more like it.
A pleasure.
Well, fine. Now, if that's your only peeve...
We ain't started yet.
No. What about them commercials?
Well, which commercials?
Well, they're always telling you the stuff their products contain.
Yeah, them names that nobody understands.
You mean this sort of a message?
Folks, have you ever tried Oto, the new oatmeal mouthwash? The only mouthwash with the genuine oatmeal base. White-collar workers... Speed up your breakfast and morning mouth rinsing with Oto. You simply gargle with Oto, your mouth is fresh, enough oatmeal trickles down your throat to serve as breakfast, and you're off. Try Oto. Oto is the only mouthwash that contains
hydro-whepitate.
Your druggist knows hydro-whepitate as purified nitro gimmick.
Your grocer knows purified nitro gimmick as undiluted fildil sulfate.
Your tailor knows undiluted fildil sulfate as genuine noxostrombide.
Your plumber knows genuine noxostrombide as phrenodelphine.
And your butcher knows a man who knows that phrenodelphine is in Oto.
So ask your druggist. Ask your druggist for Oto tomorrow. He will tell you Oto contains
hydro-whepitate.
Buy a bottle of Oto tonight.
That is what you had in mind, Mr. Snell?
Yeah, but who knows? Alco-whepitate, nitroglycerin, phthalo sulfite.
Gee, you gotta go to college to know what you're getting in a bottle of mouthwash.
Now, look, why don't they give us commercials we can understand?
You mean something plain and simple like this.
Man, have you tried Slicko, the new hair dress? Slicko keeps your hair in place. Slicko contains nothing you can't pronounce. Man, there is nothing in Slicko but a dash of perfume and pure chicken fat. Slicko won't make hair grow. Slicko just keeps your hair down and makes you smell nice. You simply slop a gob of chicken fat on your forehead. Spread back over your hair with an ordinary butter knife. Slicko does the rest. The chicken fat gives your hair that greasy gloss. The perfume makes you smell. Men, if you want that greasy gloss, men, if you want to smell, try Slicko.
That is what you mean.
Right. Now, with Slicko, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, if the guy selling chicken fat, he's calling it chicken fat. He ain't saying it's triple distilled residue of adipose tissue.
Well, I guess that...
Oh, yeah? What about them crime programs?
Yeah, always crime doesn't pay. Why can't we hear one program where crime does pay?
You mean like this?
Drop that gun, Mayhem, Maya. I'm the law.
Oh, yeah. Take this, Flatfoot. Oh. And the rest of you covers, take these. Oh. Okay, gang, let's grab. Oh,
yes, it was a clean getaway. Leaving the Blue Hornet, Mr. District Attorney, all the gangbusters, and Superman dead on the sidewalk. Mayhem Meyer and his mob escaped with $200,000. Tune in next week. Hear these crooks count this money. See how they buy yachts, Florida homes, and high-powered cars. Men like Mayhem Meyer prove that crime does pay.
Well, how is that, folks?
It's impossible.
Yeah, but it was a pleasure to hear it for a change.
Well, I tell you, we've only got about a minute left.
Hey, look, you got time for one more peeve?
Well, what is it?
Them programs that's playing hit songs. The song of the month.
The song of the week.
The song of the day.
Well, what's wrong with that?
So they always have to play good songs.
There's plenty of bad songs written.
Yeah. How about giving them dog numbers a break?
What you'd like to hear is this. We present your flop of the week.
The song that rated minus 463 on your flop parade.
And here it is, the Subway Serenade. All right, boys.
Some people like to ride the ferries. Others rather ride a bus. All folks jolly prefer a trolley, but the Subway's good enough for us. Get on at 72nd, packed and jammed. At 66, your arm is out, the door is slammed. At 59th, you start to read some guy's world telly. At 50th, the guy gets off and slugs you in the stomach. All out, change for Brooklyn locals. The guard yells, watch them doors, there go your bifocals. It's 33rd, a lady standing on your feet. A man gets up, you race the lady for the seat. 14th Street, the brakes go on, shriek and squeal. You fall and hear somebody say, you big schlemiel. It's a motion full of your ribs are broke, your clothes are mighty tattery. They give you mayhem in the Bronx and assault you at the battery. And after riding in the subway, it's swamp on the big parade. It will shatter your illusions, you'll get black eyes and contusions. Attending the Subway Serenade. Ah!
You've never heard anything worse than that, have you?
No, sir. That was certainly the hit parade in reverse, all right.
Well, fine. Now, if you're through...
Oh, just one more thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, what is that?
That mechanical applause that radio shows always get at the end. Applause. It's always applause. How about some hissing and booing for a change?
Well, from the looks of our audience, I think I can get a short order of that without any trouble. Ladies and gentlemen, how did you like this little Hassenpfeffer? And now, our thoughts for the day from Larry Elliott.
The next few moments are devoted to the entire petroleum industry by the Texas Company.